Dear Countess, by Elizabeth Morgan. With Derek Jacobi, Timothy West, Bridget McCann, Michael Fenner, and Elizabeth Morgan.
Those whom God hath joined together, let no man put asunder. For as much as Euphemia, Chalmers Gray, and John Ruskin have consented together in holy wedlock, and have witnessed the same before God and this company, and thereto have given and pledged their troth either to other, and have declared the same by giving and receiving of a ring, and by joining of hands, I pronounce that they be man and wife together. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost. Amen.
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 Come on now, Effie. Put on your bonnet. Oh, my dearest girl, you are a picture. Papa and I are very proud of you. Oh, and I'll miss you so.
No more than I'll miss you, Mama. And the little ones, too.
Oh, dear, dear. What a pair we are. Come on. No tears on your wedding day. You're going to have a wonderful life, my girl.
Yes, I know. I'm so fortunate, Mama. John is the dearest man in the world.
Aye, and an important one.
It's that importance that concerns me a wee bit. Am I a fit wife for a man like John?
You'd be a fit wife for a prince, Effie Gray, and don't you ever forget it.
Effie Ruskin now, Mama.
Yes.
Is my wife coming down?
2 minutes.
Effie?
2 minutes.
It is, I'm sure you realize, a great embarrassment to me, John. I could not make any marriage settlement on Effie. Perhaps your father has mentioned...
Mr. Gray, please, do not distress yourself. It is of no importance, I do assure you. I have but an outsider's notion of the commercial world, Mr. Gray, but I recollect my father expressing doubts about the new railroad.
Aye, that's as maybe. But when one buys shares during a boom, one cannot foresee a slump, or indeed a revolution.
Yes, of course. But meanwhile, Mr. Gray, Effie and I should consider it a duty of sheer pleasure if you would entrust to us the education of the two young ones.
Oh, Geoff,
Alice and Sophia, I know Effie is particularly fond of them.
Thank you, John. I am quite touched by your generosity. Ah, here she comes.
Effie, my beautiful bride.
John, it's the carriage waiting.
Waiting and all the luggage. It simply requires you to make the picture perfect.
Uh-huh. Are you taking all those books, John?
Dearest, I never travel anywhere without my books. Not even on my honeymoon. Come on now, we must be going.
What a pity your dear parents would not have been here.
Well, you know Mama's positive hatred of her.
Yes, your father's letter says so.
I believe he was also afraid of being taken ill himself.
Goodness me, I thought it was the Chartres processions through London that prevented them.
Aye, that too, I believe.
Oh, I shall send them some bride's cake tomorrow. Now then, where you go to Blair Athol and the Highlands?
And where after that?
Yeah, the Lake District.
God bless you, my darling. All right, Mama. Now, please, do not worry about Papa's problems. You know I can help you now. A little. Thanks, my dear. Off you go, then, now. Bye-bye.
Take care of them, there, John.
Bye-bye.
No, no, Sophia. Put away the tears now.
What is it, George? Really?
Well, they've known each other a long time, and they love each other, surely. But he's a strange laddie. A great intellect, they say. 10 years older than Effie, and not in the mould of ordinary men.
What about young Effie?
Oh, she'll be all right. An uncrushable spirit, that one.
Next year, there's sure to be a bairn. And then she'll be as occupied as he is.
Well, she'll not want for anything, not with their money.
True. His father gives him the money to travel and write and expand his genius.
Aye, a fortunate genius. But is he a husband? Well, we shall see.
Effie tells me he's invited his father to join them on the latter part of the honeymoon.
Let's go in, my love. I can feel a chill in the breeze.
Dearest Mama and Papa, John and I are as happy as two people can possibly be. I never saw anything like him. He is just perfect, the kindest creature in the world, and exceeding thoughtful. He thinks we are a model couple.
Thank you, Lawson. John, you next. We want young Mrs. Ruskin to be carefully supported when she steps down.
Very well. Welcome to Denmark Hill, my darling.
I hope Dulwich realizes its good fortune.
Thank you, Mr. Ruskin. Oh, look. Yes, look. And the servants on the steps. Oh, and here comes Mrs. Ruskin. Doesn't she look lovely?
And the German band. Don't forget the band. Away you go. Play up now. Mother.
Oh, my dear boy. Yes, you look well. Mrs. Ruskin.
Oh, Effie.
Darling, you look as pretty as a picture.
Welcome home.
A toast to our dear son John and to our dear new daughter, Effie. As you embark together upon this wonderful journey through life, may you never cease to glory and praise the name of him who created you. In loving him above all else, your own love, one for the other, can only strengthen and grow day by day. Thus will you give each other comfort in sorrow, strength in despair, help in need. May your own spirits so merge and flow like twin tributaries finding a common confluence that together they will form one inviolable defense to the harshest assault from without. God bless you both. Effie and John.
Effie and John. Well done, dear.
Thank you, Father. For this moment, I am without words.
An impossibility.
I can but express, on behalf of my dearest Effie and myself, our deepest, sincerest gratitude for all you have done, are about to do, and will no doubt continue to do, and for the faith you have ever placed in my work. I am indeed a happy man, being blessed with a wife whose beauty is the least of her gifts.
Yeah, yeah.
I know we shall be happy. How can one not? Living with an angel.
Oh, John.
To Effie.
Effie.
What is that? We shall be having Charlotte Russe cabinet pudding or gooseberry tart. Which would you like?
I've eaten so much. Salmon, fillets,
please. You must have cabinet pudding like me.
Oh. Well, I'll have gooseberry tart if you please, Mrs. Ruskin.
Good. You should put on a little weight. I fancy you are somewhat thinner.
Oh, perhaps so.
Effie has been most distressed about her father's financial prospect, Mama.
Yes, I'm sure.
I always knew there would be trouble with the railroads. There is deformity on the face of England.
Come now, I mean it.
If the stations could have been less visible, the deformity would have been less.
Ah, but that is a question of architecture.
Then it is up to you to educate them, my boy.
I like to feel I'm making some inroads into ignorance, Papa.
Effie, I so want you to be like a daughter to me.
Oh, I already am, Mrs. Ruskin. You spoil me. And the top of the house is just perfect and very comfortable for us. And you've given me so many lovely presents.
Well, dear child, what could I do with them? I may as well give them now with pleasure, for they'll all be yours when I'm gone.
You do understand that we're as proud of you as John is. Truly, I admired your white bonnet so much that I must let it be seen. So tomorrow, we are taking you to the academy.
Are we really going, John?
Yeah, but of course. It's the private view.
Then we shall see all the knobs.
Ah, the knobs will see you, my darling.
And you remember, Effie, that if that son of mine is not as kind as kind can be, tell me. And won't I settle him?
Oh, yes, Mama, I will remember your settling.
John was always willful.
You never told me that.
Well, if you have never witnessed my so-called willfulness, then it can no longer be present.
Mm-hmm. His mother cured him of that.
Yes, when he was but 1 year old. With a good whipping.
How was he willful?
Oh, crying, not doing as he was told. One day he wanted to touch the hot tea urn, and his poor nurse was nearly driven insane by his screams, so I said, let him touch it. He'd learn. He did.
Effie, dearest, Papa, Mama, please excuse me. I still have the second edition proofs to correct.
Mm. Which book this time, John?
Modern Painters. Do you not remember?
Oh, I wish I could help you.
Yeah, perhaps you will one day, my dear. When I've taught you a little more. But only if you study hard, of course. Good night.
Good night, John.
When that boy was 8, I knew that he was the most intellectual creature of his age that had ever yet appeared.
We knew he was a genius.
He has been indulged a little, naturally.
An only child, Mr. Ruskin. Not like our great family at Bowerswell.
Oh, yes, indeed. But the greatest indulgence, as my dear wife puts it, he has derived from our fortunate financial situation. And it will continue, so long as the House of Domecq continues to import sherry. If ever you find the income personally settled on you insufficient, never be afeard to say so. My daughter-in-law must always look like a reine du bal.
Thank you, Mr. Ruskin.
But you must watch young John, though. He can spend very freely.
Oh, I shall watch him from now on. He certainly owes a great deal to you.
Probably more than you will ever realize.
If I go into society at all, it is for her sake and to my infinite annoyance. Except only as the pleasure I have in seeing her admired, as by all she is, and happy, as with all she is, rewards me, and more than rewards me for my own discomforts and discomfitures.
Mama, dear.
Oh.
Mama.
Hello, John.
John, sweetheart. Oh, I have missed you.
Very good to see you, my boy.
Now then, come here. Come here. Let me look at you.
Oh, he looks well enough.
Oh, so where's Effie?
It should be done in a moment.
The work, John. How goes the work?
My next book is now planned.
Architecture?
That's right.
Perhaps another European tour.
Unfortunately, Papa, it will be essential.
And how did your little wife put up with the rigors of your Normandy trip?
I should have said the rigors of accompanying John.
Yes. I'm afraid poor Effie will be far better off with you and Papa than with me. You have certainly spoiled me so far as walks are concerned.
Oh, dear John.
No, I had no idea of the effect of fatigue on women. After half a mile, Effie is reduced to fainting and tears.
Well, you must teach her.
Unfortunately, she's content to sit and wait 3 hours together.
Which is more than your mama could do.
And how do you like living here in Park Street, John?
Effie likes the idea of keeping house. So should I, but for being away from you. Now, how will you and Papa manage? But I'm so near, yet not with you in the evenings. I don't like the thought of it.
Well, neither do we.
Mrs. Ruskin.
Ah.
Oh, Mr.
Welcome home, Effie. Well, and how do you like your new home?
I simply love it. All the furnishings are quite delightful. Mrs. Ruskin, you chose so well. And cook makes wonderful pastries.
All I ask is that you will not labor on for us beyond your intended time. Every day I spend in idleness and you labor, I feel heavier on my conscience. This house is an escapade, Father.
Oh, John, Park Street is one of the best addresses in town. Only 5 doors away from Lady David.
Exactly. And you have a beautiful wife. You must seek only the best society. She's much better calculated for society. You're better in print, my boy.
Now, Effie, Mr. Ruskin and I have a little present for you. And it will be ready for a set and date.
Oh, what is it? Do tell me.
Well, now, first of all, would you like a box to hear Jenny Lind sing?
You know we should. You would come, John.
A box? Why not a stall?
Oh, good heavens, no. We shall have a box on the grand tier opposite the Queen.
Oh, really? You won't read this time, John. Not as you did in Oxford.
Effie, I was glad you enjoyed the concert in Oxford, but I consider Haydn's Creation the most detestable, boring piece of music ever written. And if Miss Lind is half as boring, I shall do likewise. This time, my curiosity may surpass my boredom.
I hope so. Particularly as your wife is to have a new black velvet gown for the occasion.
Do you hear that, John?
Then you will look so enchanting, my darling, the sight of you should keep me from reading a book. Yeah, but to make absolutely sure, could you not contrive to hang the box about the turn?
Oh,
that would positively engross me for a month of Jenny Lind.
John, I'm so happy. It's all so exciting. My very first London season. I can hardly believe it.
Can you not? Now, if you will all excuse me, I have work to do.
Of course, dear.
Between us, we shall ease him out into the highest circles.
After all, a genius cannot hide his light under a bushel.
Oh, there'll be no bushels here, Mrs. Ruskin.
Effie, from the beginning of December, we have planned a series of important dinner parties.
And as you are our Ren du Bal, we think it would be better if you and John moved back to Denmark Hill, just for the festive season.
Are you comfortable in this bedroom, John?
Extremely.
Why do you laugh?
Oh, Papa, when he thought I had requested you to remove yourself to another room on account of my illness, he concluded it had come about through the fatigue of married life due to my having connections with you.
Did he really?
Papa imagines things are very different from what they are.
Doesn't he?
Effie, something you have not yet realized. People who cannot get at me otherwise will try and do so through you.
Yes, John, I do realize.
I find myself so well when I'm quiet and so miserable in general society.
Yes, indeed, you were at that naval party, standing in a corner looking at your watch.
My dear Effie, I knew no one. Not even a strange young woman who claimed acquaintance with me. And another who asked if I liked drawing.
I take it you have no objection to my tea party.
Of course not, so long as you do not expect me to attend.
You suddenly appeared at the last one. Why?
Merely to show your friends that I wasn't a myth.
All my friends cannot be like the Eastlakes, John.
Unfortunately.
I think I like Elizabeth Eastlake better than all the women I have met in London.
And I admire Charles, though not his purchases for the National Gallery. So, Effie, we are agreed on one couple.
There's no sense in it. The late nights you enjoy TV. It's no surprise to see you in such a cold, John, dear. Not too much. Don't you have my precious. There we are.
Oh,
there.
Thank you.
Another pillow. And another coverlet.
I can do that, Mrs. Ruskin.
Oh, you're not in such a fit state yourself, Effie.
Now, you've had a cold, but this recuperative period has cast you in the deepest depression and gloom. Your misery is plain for all to see.
John, dear, I beg you, do not exert yourself. You are utterly exhausted, quite apart from your cold.
I think I shall return to my room.
Indeed, you cannot, Effie. The nurse is to dress for supper. Madame de Bethune is expecting to meet you.
Then she will be disappointed.
As John will be making the effort to be with us at table, we shall expect to see you accompany him. It is your duty, Effie. And I do not expect to see another display of willful petulance on your part again.
Oh, why does your mother constantly interfere?
Nonsense. She's done all she can to make you happy. And indeed, I must agree with her regarding your willfulness, Effie. You're overstressed in some way, possibly.
Overstressed? Yes.
And I am utterly puzzled as to the reason. Perhaps you're lamenting your lost home. As bitterly as I lament not being in Switzerland at this very moment.
I'm going to my room. I shall change for supper.
Good girl, Effie. I have to agree, Mama was right. I should like to see you outgrow your girl's frocks, you know. Petulant resistance of authority, which begins in pride and is nourished by folly, always ends in pain. Remember that.
Yes, John. I'll remember.
John, do not read those papers until they're dried. And now get me room with these damp towels. Now, I shall take all your clothes to George to air before you dress for dinner.
Thank you, Mama.
Your mother has told me all. Has the young Miss Dane to dine with us?
Yes, she has. I cannot understand
her. Perhaps she'd like to see her family.
So long as she goes alone.
The idea of visiting the Isles again fills me with horror.
You need a change of air, my boy. We shall have another Swiss tour in the spring, certainly.
That's a pleasurable thought, Papa. It will be of immense value. I have notes to make and volume 4 to write.
And how about Effie? Will she come?
She seems not to be so entrapped as I by love of the continent.
But perhaps the Alps.
Papa, travelling with Effie is... She is slow, she must stop for lunches, she cannot rise early. In fact, she does not fit in with our way of doing things.
In that case, she may prefer to stay with her family in Perth.
Of course she would. I'll be happier. So long as she is happy and lets me get on with my work.
Well, naturally, I should disapprove of this separation entirely. Were you going abroad for pleasure?
Also, I feel sure she's not well enough for Swiss excursions this year.
Yeah, and Mrs. Gray will take great care of her.
Now, perhaps she will benefit from seeing one of her own Scottish doctors. Meanwhile, I should return here.
To your old study.
Eh? And to better light. And to all my turners.
Dr. Simpson was right about a baby. Of course, having had 13 of you and one on the way, I hardly remember what life was like without you all.
But John doesn't like babies. He sees that all that lumps of putty and just eat babies before breakfast makes him quite sick.
Just you wait, my girl.
I wrote John I'd like a baby. A little Alice.
Uh-huh. And has he replied?
Well, his last letter... I have a key in my sewing box. You tell me you would like a little Alice of your own. So should I. A little Effie, at least.
There, I told you. And I cannot wait to be a grandmama.
Have you received any letters from John's parents?
No, but I believe Papa has, from Mr. Ruskin. He does seem genuinely concerned about your health.
Possibly. Mrs. Ruskin, on the other hand, has but one concern. John.
Oh, well, that's natural. The only child, and she was so late having him. And that's another good reason for giving her a wee grandchild, poor soul.
When John returns next month, I should like him to come here to fetch me. I've told him so.
Oh, he surely will.
I feel...
You feel what, my dear?
We must be alone together, Mama, John and I, without his parents. They're only for a few days. 8 months apart is a long time.
Too long, Effie.
An urgent request from young Alice. She wants her big sister to tell her a story before she goes to sleep.
Of course I will.
You be sure it's only the one. Young Alice will have you weaving tales for hours.
Only one, Mama. I promise.
Sophia, I must speak with you.
Whatever's the matter, dear? No more bad news from the stock market.
No. Purely family. I've had a letter from John.
John? He doesn't normally write to you, does he?
It is not a normal letter. But he writes about his wife, what he thinks about her. Oh, I could not believe my eyes.
Oh, John.
I am shocked, profoundly shocked.
Well, what did he say?
He put her illness, her depression, down to a nervous disease affecting the brain.
Oh.
An illness bordering in many of its features on incipient insanity.
What?
He is, however, sorry for the suffering she has undergone.
Let me see the letter. Causeless petulance towards my mother. Something about a blue pill. And that the first use of influence on her part since our marriage. And Effie now looks with jealousy on my mother's influence over me. How dare he?
How dare he indeed?
Oh. But they've been apart for 8 months already, and people are gossiping. How dare he suggest such a thing? Oh, Georgia, I'm so angry. What are we to do?
Now, my dear, calm yourself. Effie must never know John has written to me.
Oh, no, agreed.
Sophia, I should like an opportunity to talk to Mr. and Mrs. Ruskin about our children. I am concerned about Effie and her future with John.
She does love him, I know.
Aye, and as much as it is possible for John Ruskin to love anyone, he loves Effie. Would you welcome such a meeting?
I should indeed, George. But when? What did you in mind?
Oh, nothing as yet. We must bide our time.
Paris, April the 24th, 1849. I expect a line from my dearest love tomorrow. Do you know, Pet, it seems almost a dream to me that we have been married. I look forward to meeting you, and to your next bridal night, and to the time when I shall again draw your dress from your snowy shoulders, and lean my cheek upon them, as if you were still my betrothed only, and I had never held you in my arms.
Your wish that I should come here to Scotland to fetch you is natural enough.
Then why did you appear to make objections?
I have not the smallest objection. Only, please do not mistake your womanly pride for womanly affection.
I love you, John, but I have been most unwell.
My dear Effie, I know about your illness, and no one is more concerned than I. But do you not see that if love instead of pride had prompted your request, you would never have thought of what I ought to do? You would only have thought of being with me as soon as you could, and your answer would have been that of Imogen. Oh, for a horse with wings. Look it up. Cymbeline, Act 3, Scene 2.
You have no feelings of ordinary, plain humanity.
But you are not my mistress in knowledge of the world. If you knew a little more of it, you would not write impertinent letters to your...
Impertinent? I cannot understand you, John Ruskin. You are so full of contradiction.
And why not? Contradiction is all part of truth.
I need you, John, here with me. And alone.
But, Effie, you must be prepared to part with me for a month or two. because I must either follow my present pursuits with the same zeal that I have hitherto followed them, or go into the church.
John, my letter. The one about our wedding night at Blair Athol. What did you think?
I did not realize it was a trial for you. Dearest Effie, it must have been cruel. Next time it will be much nicer. We shall neither of us be frightened.
Oh. You are glad to be here, John.
Of course I am.
Thank you for coming to fetch me.
It is my parents you should be thanking.
Why is that?
It was in obedience to their wishes that I came back, instead of going to Venice for a month. There were so many notes I wanted to make for the book.
Why don't we both go to Venice, John? You could collect all the information you require, and I should be with you. Not to bother you. Simply be there when you wanted me.
My clever little wife. What a delightful idea. We shall leave in 2 weeks. I shall write to Papa immediately.
Oh, would they be coming along with us?
Alas, no. They're worn out from the last 5 months.
Oh, yes, they must be. So, John, may I take a chaperone, Charlotte Kerr, to keep me company?
Well, you may take whomever you like to amuse you, so long as you leave me in peace to work.
We appreciate your concern over Effie, and naturally we share your desire to promote a better understanding between them, between us all.
That's why we're here in London.
Quite so, quite so.
Mr. Gray, so far as we are aware, Effie has rejected our kindness and good offices.
Mrs. Ruskin, whilst in Perth, I drew her out upon the causes of misunderstanding, which for some time have alienated you from each other. I merely wish to bring about a reconciliation.
Effie has the greatest affection for John, and her earnest wish is to have the same for you and Mrs. Ruskin.
Is that so?
And you must also consider her natural manners are thoroughly Scottish.
Mm. And what does that signify, pray?
She tends to make no display of feeling, even to those to whom she is much attached.
Very well. You may tell her that Mr. Ruskin and I entirely forgive her, but we do expect from the love which we hope she bears my son that she will try to make his pleasures hers, to like what he likes for his sake.
Well, Effie has no desire, I assure you, to disturb John in following his pursuits. Though no doubt a winter in Switzerland would cure him of his fancy.
Fancy? Is that what you call it, Mr. Gray? John is a genius. And a genius must always be finding inspiration and occupation.
Yes, all right, my dear. John is never abroad for pleasure or fancy. He is there for hard work, and Effie should sacrifice every feeling to duty.
John is
and cause him no unnecessary anxiety.
Effie's pride in John is entirely akin to yours, and no selfish desire on her part would have wanted him to return to Perth, if that's your point, before completing his work.
That may be so, Mrs. Gray, but he received considerable pressure from yourselves and Effie on that occasion.
Well, Effie is his wife.
And John has always had most severe colds whenever he visits your home, or indeed anywhere in Scotland.
You must make allowances for parental fears about his health, Mrs. Gray.
It's his brain, see? John's brain is always too busy to let his body be strong.
I know that many say he ought to rough it more, but after his last attempt at roughing it...
Oxford wasn't it?
Oxford. Oh. He went into a decline.
I take it you're not suggesting he roughs it in Perth.
I should hardly think the roughing it he has presumably had to put up with at our home compares with the discomfort of his activities in Switzerland, up and down the Alps and mules.
Some activity is good for his brain, Mr. Gray, as I've said.
Let us hope the activity in Venice will prove equally beneficial.
As a matter of fact, I have received some very agreeable correspondence from my son.
Oh, we have, likewise, from Effie. She seems to be enjoying herself hugely.
So we're told.
They're mixing in a no less than glittering social media.
Mm-hmm. I should say Effie was. Well, John, she appears never to be at home and never short of admirers.
Let me assure you, apropos of your remark, Mrs. Ruskin, Effie is more than mindful of her reputation in whatever she does. It's not easy for a young woman, almost always on her own, without her husband, to be exposed to society. That's the reason she took Miss Care as a chaperone.
Very sensible of her.
Well, my feeling is that both our children are benefiting greatly from this Italian interlude.
I know John is completely absorbed in his work, and however sad I feel, I would not have him in England at the present, though I must admit to a heart-sickening impatience to see him and to hear him.
Yes, well, my impatience is directed more towards their financial arrangement.
Well, how is that, sir?
If the gentleman fancies himself economical and the lady fancies herself a manager, they are both mistaken. They have overdrawn above £1,000.
Oh, they should exercise some control over that expenditure.
Alas, my son is too fond of pictures, and your daughter too fond of dress.
But she is not to be.
But her circumstances have changed, have they not?
Let us not forget, my dear sir, who encouraged Effie and John to sally forth into society.
Effie always dressed well, but on no more than £30 a year.
I can well believe it, and her taste would have suited me admirably then. Effie, through her natural gifts, could afford to be as quiet as a Quakeress, but now she will choose very gay colours.
Of course, John does incline to Turner's colours, dear, even in his wife's
dress. I should estimate that John's picture purchasing is the heaviest item in the young people's expenditure.
Oh, do you? Well, I do not wish to throw a heavy share of blame on Effie, but I pay for all John's pictures myself.
May I make a suggestion to ensure the continuance of their present well-being?
Please do.
You, sir, and Mrs. Ruskin should leave the young couple alone. Do not interfere with their lives.
Interfere, Mr. Gray. Interfere. I suppose, sir, buying their house, their furniture, their clothes, carriage, servants, in short, giving them utter financial independence, you would consider the grossest type of interference?
Effie, my dear child, come in. Come in.
Elizabeth, how lovely to see you again.
Sit down, my dear. Now, I want to hear all about Venice.
And so you shall. Oh, I'm not disturbing you, am I? Were you working?
Oh, you know me by now, dear, an amateur scribbler. I'm compiling endless lists of paintings that Charles wants to buy for the National Gallery.
Oh, and I've interrupted.
I cannot think of a more pleasant interruption. This can wait, but my curiosity about Venice cannot. So please begin.
Where? Well, if I tell you how I miss my social life after only 2 weeks of absence, you may imagine how truly enchanting and exciting I found the city.
How lovely. And John, is he satisfied with his work?
John is never satisfied, but he has written a great deal. The book is planned for next year, and he thinks we shall have to return to Venice to complete it.
Oh, exciting. You look so much healthier, Effie, so I must assume that husband of yours is treating you well.
John is kindness itself, so long as I never interfere with him. Good and considerate in many ways, but, well, he's peculiar, like all men of genius, I suppose.
Mm. Frankly, I cannot imagine John Ruskin enjoying the lighter side of Venetian life.
He did not. He rarely participated.
Then, my dear girl, how did you...
When we went to a ball, John would leave at 11, but Charlotte and I between 1 and 2.
And he was perfectly happy to abandon you unescorted.
But Elizabeth, generally he would not venture out at all, and I became much happier following my own plans and pursuits and leaving him alone.
Foolish man, with such a pretty wife and all those dashing young Austrian officers. He could lose her altogether.
No. John is perfectly amiable and so completely devoid of jealousy.
Aha, jealousy. So you must have had escort, you little fool. Nevertheless, I am glad Charlotte was with you.
Yes.
Venice could have been difficult as well as lonely without her.
Oh, indeed. Well, John would shut himself up in his dressing room, breakfast alone, and would remain so for the whole day.
Then how do you suppose John will react to the coming season?
Well, he thinks it very good for me to go out in the evening, as I am, so long as he is not disturbed or bored. I have a general order to refuse all invitations for him, but I may go everywhere I like.
But this is not Venice, my dear. London society has a very much more stringent set of rules.
Oh.
Are you happy with this arrangement?
Very. Well, I think we are better friends than we were. Now his health is better, and mine too. That is, so long as he is not with the old people.
Oh, the Ruskins must realize their son is an adult. And John must surely be disconcerted, to say the least, by all this silly cosseting.
No, he appears completely undisturbed by it. His reactions are that of a boy. Do you know he writes daily accounts of his physical state? And in one letter he gave details of his pulse, perspiration and sleep.
Well, we may laugh, Effie, but it is neither pleasant nor good for you to be subjected to this nursery behavior.
John is completely infatuated with them and spends all his day at that eternal Denmark Hill, where he says the light is better and he may gaze upon his Turner drawing room. And as for Mrs. Ruskin's almost amatory tenderness to John, beloved, heart's delight, treasure, well, most extraordinary. Yes, my affection for them does not increase as I get older.
Oh, there. Grumbling is over. Please forgive my endless chatter.
Dear Effie, you are a delight. Chatter on. Both Charles and I adore you.
Tell me, how are your dear parents?
Very well. But I do miss them.
Perhaps you'll be able to visit Perth before you go abroad again.
Oh, yes, I intend to go shortly. John will not even notice.
Oh, dear.
Apart from his absorption with his book, he's now the champion of the Pre-Raphaelite Brotherhood.
Yes, indeed. We read his letter, a fine letter, in the Times. Any response from the young painters?
Oh, yes. A very warm letter of thanks from Holman Hunt and Millais, and breakfast with the latter.
Ah, was the breakfast satisfactory?
Eminently. Millais is very young, very enthusiastic, and he and John talked endlessly. John says he will invite Millais to dinner at Denmark Hill whilst I'm away, as he hopes to expand Millais's intellectual interests and to persuade him to accept some of his own ideas.
Does he now?
Nevertheless, my dear Millais, I shall continue to persuade you to change your opinion.
Do not misunderstand me. Whilst I admire Turner, I do not share your enthusiasm. And your admiration for him may slacken and attach itself rather more wholeheartedly to us.
Oh, the Pre-Raphaelite Brotherhood will always have my admiration and support.
But never to the exclusion of my beloved Turner.
John will have too much invested in Turner.
Ah, that depends on the view you take of me and my work, Papa. I couldn't write as I do when I settled myself a reformer. Either this Turner is the man of the generation, or I know nothing.
Your talent is no modest one, Mr. Millais. When I saw your Ophelia, nothing could be truer to Shakespeare. Such refinement in the whole figure, the floating dress, as I never before saw expressed on canvas.
Exquisite, Millais. Exquisite. Thank you, John. Your good opinion is of enormous value, not only for myself, but for the group.
Millais, come with us to Switzerland. We shall be going in a month or two, en route for Venice again.
Unfortunately, I cannot. Work prevents me.
John, how can you ever consider travelling beyond Dover with all the political unrest, corruption, and uncertainty that awaits you in Calais?
What would you do, Henry?
Well, I'd simply go into Devonshire.
Now, it's not the French that are to blame for their problems. It's their morals. They are sufficiently bad to think about any change for evil.
And Romanism. Do not forget Romanism. Oh, no. Like an insidious canker that spreads through a nation. Never could abide Romanism.
No, I'm inclined to agree, Mr. Ruskin. But of course the French are not half so bad as the Swiss and Germans.
Oh, absolutely.
But the single circumstances of wives separating from their husbands for the least difference is fair enough. But a friend of mine dined lately with a party of six in Berlin who were all married to each other.
Oh! I'm happy my wife didn't hear your account of that story.
Nevertheless, I am sorry not to have met her again. I trust she's not indisposed, John.
I know she's visiting her parents in Perth. Dreadful place. Bidding an au revoir before we set off.
The port is with you, Doctor.
Ah, yeah.
Forgive my presumption, John. But when you return, would you consider allowing me to paint your wife? That is, to use her as a model in my next magnum opus. For the Academy, I hope.
Ah, of course, my dear fellow.
And your wife? Would she not find sitting too tedious?
No, Effie will be delighted.
What's that?
Millais would like to use Effie as a model when we return.
Ah, no, splendid. And I have a request for Mr. Millais. Would you be so free to undertake a commission from me, shall we say, next summer?
I shall indeed. And be honored to oblige you, sir.
Good. Then I should like you to paint John.
Yeah, oh, thank you, Papa.
Rural background, of course.
Your father knows my penchant for rocks and running water.
Ooh, Millais, too, it would seem. What about Ophelia?
Yeah.
Where would you suggest?
I have it. As you cannot accompany us to Switzerland this year, let us join forces next year for a month or two in the Highlands.
Yes, mm-hmm. We shall find several perfect backgrounds for a formula.
Yes, an excellent idea. I shall look forward to it. New territory for me, the Highlands.
My wife will be overjoyed to be in her beloved Scotland again. So near her ain folk.
You are sure she will sit for me?
My dear Millais, it will give Effie something to look forward to and think about. The poor wee creature finds London exceedingly dull after Venice. I shall be grateful to you to take her off my hands.
I cannot believe my eyes.
This house is hideous.
It's so vulgar. It's overwhelming in its lack of taste.
For the first time, I feel ashamed to invite my friends to visit me.
Come now, John. You may be angry before me, but I hope you will not be angry before your father. He just did what he thought was right.
I'm appalled at the smallness of the house. Really, Effie, I shall neither be able to live nor work here.
But, John, there are many things we may do to improve our situation. The conservatory has a vine, and the wee garden is very pleasing.
I shall work at Denmark Hill as before.
Each day?
Of course.
And what shall I do?
Whatever you wish. In heaven's name, Effie, learn to occupy yourself. Read, study, anything.
Had it not been for you and your inability to live in peace at the top of my parents' house, we should not be in this situation. Consider that, if you please.
Quite right, John. I cannot live with your parents, for they interfere constantly with everything we do. It amazes me that you fail to observe it.
Well, have they not every right to interfere? They have devoted their lives to their son. Have they no right to be cherished by him in their old age, to be obeyed even? And have they no right to expect his wife to aid her husband in this?
And when have I not? Do I complain that we must eat dinner at Denmark Hill each evening?
Is this an arduous task for you? To accompany your husband to the house of his parents? Oh, Effie.
There is no room for anyone in their hearts, in their lives. Only you.
On the contrary, whilst in Switzerland, it was they who pleaded with me, reminded me of my duty to you. It was only in obedience to them that I came to Perth to fetch you.
How interesting. I trust they were pleased with their boy for obeying.
Do not mock. If by one single instance you could but attempt to bring pleasure to their twilight years, how much easier life would be for all, particularly for me, your husband.
And how should I please them, John, when I am the object of so much of their criticism? Why does your father constantly criticize my so-called extravagance? More than once he has written to Papa to complain about me. And do not forget that I am as loved in Perth as you in Denmark Hill.
And do not you forget that it is my father who provides you with money, not yours. Surely you don't deny him the right to supervise his own expenditure.
But I am blamed for the extravagant taste which they have given you. Your mania for buying old books.
My work, woman!
And the Turner engravings, £160. Must you have the best engravings in the country?
Yes, I must. And I shall have no more of your interference.
Where do I fit into your life, John? How do you see my role as your wife?
To sit quietly beside me and attend to my wants, allowing me time and freedom to pursue my life's work.
But you say I may do as I like.
Yes!
That is a contradiction.
Do not interfere with me. I shall do my work in my own way, in my own room. I shall not see anybody, nor call on anybody. I dare say you will find me a more tiresome creature than ever.
How I look forward to the forthcoming season.
Well, perhaps I should offer you £800 a year to allow me to retire to a monastery. You may retain my name, of course. A sitting for Mr. Millet may give you an interest.
You have a beautiful head, Mrs. Ruskin, as I constantly tell you.
Thank you, Mr. Millet.
But I do find it immensely difficult to paint.
You're not the first artist to say that, Mr. Millet. Everyone who has ever tried has thought likewise.
It's the expression, the half smile that I so desperately wish to capture. I think we should. It is almost there.
I'll keep as still as I can.
Just one more stroke. There. And there. That's it. Perhaps not quite as soft an expression as you have, Mrs. Ruskin, but precisely what I wanted.
Then I'm happy. May I look?
Oh, of course, you must want to rest by now.
My neck is a little stiff.
My dear lady, forgive me. I should have realized.
Oh, don't fret. I know about artists. Once they start, there's little that can disturb the concentration.
How well you understand.
Oh, yes. Oh, it's so very good. Do you know, Mr. Millet, I believe it is the very best painting of my head that I've ever seen. Yes. When is sending in date of the Academy?
I have 5 more days to complete. And I paint slowly, as your poor stiff neck has observed.
Oh, but you could never paint faster working as you do, with such wonderful detail and precision.
Oh, I'm glad you make excuses for your hard taskmaster, Mrs. Ruskin. I'd love to paint you again next year, if you'd consent, that is.
Oh, I'd be delighted.
Perhaps in the Highlands, in between painting John.
Why not? With everyone intent upon occupation, I can see that I shall have to think of something besides organizing food and sherry.
I shall teach you to draw.
Would you really? Do you promise?
To teach you will be so pleasurable. You will have to send me scurrying away, or I shall never paint John.
And John, in between times, will be forever writing and preparing his lectures for the Edinburgh Institution.
When will he deliver them?
November.
Oh, so we may look forward to several months in, where is it?
Glenfinlas.
Millet has taught Effie to draw portraits. And she's done wonderful things already of us all, and works hard all day. But alas, the constant rain keeps us indoors.
Careful. Come on.
No, no more. Please, rest.
Your wish is my command, Countess.
Is your thumb giving you pain?
Thanks to your gentle nursing, I shall survive.
But the nail will not. Oh, let me see. Oh, and your poor nose.
No pain, but the scar remains. Do you see?
Oh, yes, see. Poor Everett. You know, when you're cold, I can see little furrows on your cheeks. There must have been serious hurts when you were a wee lad. Oh, Henry, how lovely to see you again.
Effie, my dear. Miss Lay, pleasure to meet you again. I hear you're drawing and sketching magnificently.
If the weather holds, today has been perfect.
Oh, but it's rained incessantly for weeks.
I can hardly call Edinburgh a dry. Tomorrow he starts my portrait.
John is to be standing facing downstream, looking sweetly benign.
A lovely piece of worn rock, a fast-flowing stream and a bank of dark crab.
A very typical pose, I think.
We shall have Turner's St. Gotthard and Millet's Glenfinlas. Well, so much for these menfolk. And what have you been doing in the rainy season, Effie?
Everett's been teaching me to draw.
The best pupil anyone could have. She has done in a few weeks what I could do after 6 years.
Well done, Effie.
But naturally, we're not blaming the Countess for the frightful weather, are we, John? Even though it is her country.
Indeed, you cannot. I hear it is wet in the south of England, so I'm still able to hold my head up.
And since when have you been elevated to the rank of Countess, Effie?
Now, Everett's idea. Oh, we're so far removed from civilization, Dr. Ackland. In our own kingdom, I believe we may call each other what we choose.
And, John, you're preparing your Edinburgh lectures, you say?
Along with trying to manage Everett. His mind is so active, he can hardly stay quiet a minute without sketching. I think sure he keeps himself awake all night planning pictures.
What are you sketching now, Millie?
Look at this. Everett's design for a church window. I knew these Pre-Raphaelite fellows were eminently capable of copying nature, but I certainly never expected such invention. It's magnificent. You're an artist of outstanding talent, my dear sir.
Oh, John gave me lessons in architecture. He's been my inspiration. Oh,
John's a constant inspiration to many of us.
Do you not recognize the angels in my drawing?
Hmm? Well, let me see. Oh, why, yes, of course. The profiles. Effie. An excellent choice. Beautiful.
How do you like our cottage, Henry?
Well, it's charming. Rustic. Rather small.
Much as we should love you to stay here, Henry, be thankful. The inn will be far more comfortable.
But a trout breakfast with us, Henry.
I shall be delighted. Now, if you'll excuse me, I shall take my leave.
Of course, my dear fellow.
Good night, Effie. Millie. Tomorrow at breakfast.
Let me go on the path, Henry. I should probably do some fishing if the weather
holds. I think I should retire too. The Highland air makes me pleasantly sleepy. Good night, Everett.
Good night, Countess. And thank you.
For nothing, Everett.
For so very much. Dear, sweet, delightful Countess.
I look forward with such joy to tomorrow.
Given the sun in the afternoon, we shall make a start now my canvas has arrived. Would you care for a jar of stout?
Thank you, Emily.
The Countess has retired. Had you not noticed?
Oh, so she has.
Your good health, sir.
And yours.
Ackland was right. She does look better.
Yes, perhaps physically, but her mental state, as always, unstable.
Why unstable?
She suffers from acute depressions, tears and gloom in abundance. Although I must say, they've not followed their usual pattern here. In other words, I've not seen her sullen and silent for days on end.
That is difficult to imagine. She's always the very soul of liveliness. To what do you attribute this depression?
It is a nervous disease affecting the brain.
But that is very serious.
Well, of course. Any disease which determines behavior surely is.
John? You frequently appear to take notes on her remarks and general comportment.
Yes, I am an observer, my dear Everett, of the twists and turns of her mind. Being always cognizant of her nervous disability, you understand.
Yes.
To what purpose do you put your observations?
Where necessary, I correct aspects of her character which I find displeasing. Particularly displays of that childish petulance which is the most disagreeable.
I, too, have observed, John. You appear, if I may say so, extraordinarily indifferent to her person.
You suggest I'm indifferent, dear. Well, if its opposite is to be constantly enthralled to a wife, then I am indifferent and would not choose to be otherwise. All women should depend upon themselves, for a husband, for company, entertainment, and engrossing employment.
Perhaps a family would provide the Countess with the engrossing employment you obviously desire.
That were possible. But Effie is as yet unfitted to be a mother. And when I think of my own mother, particularly, she is most unfitted. A mind, a way of life, is I not yet sufficiently ordered nor regulated? No, my dear Everett, I cannot approve of what I see at present.
The Countess is a very sensitive woman.
Yes, so it would seem. Yeah, I remember when we were in Rouen, how she wept at the news of her aunt's death. I delayed telling her until the morning. She felt it very much. And consequently, I lost the best of the morning.
Had you no feeling for her predicament?
I think I have hardly any warmth or feeling, except for mountains and pictures.
Even when Effie was weeping?
Oh, I comforted her dutifully, but I felt it by no means as a husband should. It was rather a bore. You see, I don't feel, I think, and it may be as well that I am not easily worked upon by those things.
Perhaps not for your wife.
Perhaps. And I have no love of gaiety either, much to Effie's annoyance. I thought I could change her, and she thought she could change me. There is little hope of that now.
Are you tired of posing, John? Do you want a rest?
No, I'm quite happy observing the water.
Very well.
It's fascinating. The colour of a given space of surface in a stream entirely changes merely as you stoop or raise your head, even though standing quite still. One should always approach lakes and streams with reverence. So many differences between the aspect of the reflected image and that of the object casting it. The law of reflection is also interesting. Suppose all the objects above the water actually reversed, not in appearance, but in fact, beneath the water, and precisely in the same form.
And how's your painting coming along, Effie?
All topsy-turvy.
It looked like a tree.
Then, whatever...
Not only looks like a tree, it is a beautifully painted tree.
Being generous, Everett.
If you were not such a captivating person, I should feel quite disgusted with your attitude.
The solid objects...
Please take a rest, John. Come and look at our new artist. Upon my word, Countess, you have the makings of a first-class painter.
Let me see.
That is good.
Up there, you see. If you'd been obedient and had taken notice of what I had said and written, you would have paid more attention to the composition of your landscape rather than to symmetry.
Oh.
See, symmetry in nature is never formal, nor accurate. I'm sure Everett would agree. However, a good beginning, Effie dear.
Well, now I shall return to the Ducal Palace to work.
What am I to do?
Stay. I'm sure Everett will amuse you. Goodbye to you both.
He seems not to care one iota.
It is just his way, Everett. He always has other things on his mind.
Always. Shall we take a walk?
I should love to. Where?
We could explore the far bank today, the other side of the stream.
How do we cross?
Aha. As your knight in shining armor, I shall build you a bridge of stepping stones, milady.
Here's a good stone for bridge building.
Be careful.
Have no fear, dear lady.
Everett, are you all right? Not your thumb again?
No. My finger.
Oh, poor boy. Come here. Let me see.
It's not too bad. Look.
Oh, it's bleeding. Quite badly. One moment. My kerchief. I'll bandage up. There. Better? Oh, you poor singer.
Thank you, Countess. You are the most delightful creature that ever breathed.
Hush, Everett.
Oh, but you are. You grow more delightful and more beautiful each day.
You should not say such things. It's wrong.
Because you were married to another.
Yes.
Tell me, Countess, do you hate me for expressing my sentiments so boldly? Do you? Tell me, please.
Everett, dear Everett, you must know I do not. How could I? But it is wrong. Oh,
perhaps it is. But he is not of our kind, Effie. His soul is always with the clouds, out of reach of ordinary mortals.
Certainly out of my reach.
Forgive my saying so, but your husband is unworthy of a woman possessing such affection and sensibility.
Perhaps you misunderstand him, Everett.
Oh, one surely cannot misunderstand his actions, his attitudes, his inquisitorial practice of noting down everything you say which could be cause for complaint against you.
Oh, so you have noticed him also.
Added to that, I find his habit of roaming off by himself, abstracted, neglectful of you, completely insufferable. I'm sorry. I have expressed my feelings rather too strongly, I fear.
Oh, you're sweet to feel so indignant on my behalf.
And you, my dear Countess, will endure all this and more because you still love him.
Love has nothing to do with my feelings, Everett.
Are you saying you do not love him, your husband?
Oh, I did once. Deeply and tenderly. But you see, it's so difficult for me to explain. John has never been more than a friend.
Sorry, Countess, I do not fully understand you.
Let's sit down, just for a moment. May I talk to you, Everett, about very personal matters?
Of course. Dearest Effie, I can see there is much that troubles you.
I said John had never been more than a friend. That is precisely the truth of our relationship. We have never... He has never made me his wife.
What? Countess, are you telling me your marriage has never been consummated?
That is so.
My God. My God. Why the devil did the fellow have the audacity to marry?
Is this a wholly unnatural state for a wedded couple?
Holy! You must leave him. You have no choice.
But how?
Oh, do you have a trusted confidant?
Lady Eastlake, Elizabeth.
Tell her. Ask her advice. She may suggest divorce.
Divorce? Oh, the very thought is so shocking.
No more than your charade of a marriage.
Perhaps not. I must think clearly. Oh, we should be getting back.
Very well. You take your paint box and I shall manage the rest.
Mind the mud, Everett.
Take my arm. Come along.
Here.
Oh, the mud.
Oh,
what a pair we are. Are you all right, Countess?
Oh, I'm covered in mud. Oh,
I love you, Effie.
My feelings are so confused at the moment. But one thing I do know, I feel very, very close to you.
I had not dared to hope that. And for the moment, it is more than enough. I shall try to behave as though I know nothing and we're as before. Oh, but God knows how I shall finish the portrait. I shall stay here for as long as possible, perhaps until you go to Edinburgh.
Will you write to me?
Of course I shall. Will he object?
If he does, then I shall have to tell my mother, and at least we may keep in touch through her or Elizabeth Eastlake. Whatever the future holds for us, I want you to know how happy I have been during the past few months. Our walks, games, and all the laughter. Yes, especially the laughter.
You are not going to lose me, Countess. Ever.
No. No, you must not kiss me. Please, I'm a married woman. Do not forget.
In name only, Countess. Do not you forget.
My dear Mrs. Gray, Effie passes her days in sullen melancholy, and nothing can help her but an entire change of heart.
Why could you not have placed yourself on the same train as John?
She could not rise in time, could you, Effie?
No, John. It must have been the drowsy effect of the down air.
In the event you caused Crawley the inconvenience of searching for a cab at midnight.
And such a severe night at that.
My apologies to all. Well, if you'll excuse me, I'll retire as I have a dreadful headache and feel most unwell.
It's your customary condition in Denmark here, Effie, is it not?
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
I wish I could say Effie looked forward to her house with pleasure, Mama.
I'm sure you do, dear.
She has maybe had an over-engrossing time of it at Glenfinlas, in the company of young Mr. Millais.
No doubt she will miss Mr. Millais.
Do you suppose that he will finish your portrait in the near future?
I have no idea. However, let us plan the tour for May.
Well, dear, now, this time we do not wish to amalgamate the old and the young. I have only half made up my mind to go to Switzerland.
Mama, you will be more than happy when I tell you that Effie would like to stay with Cecilia Northcott in Germany. We could leave her there and go on to Switzerland.
En famille, eh, John?
Precisely. Well, it's late. I bid you both good night.
Good night, dear.
Oh, my boy.
Poor boy. Married to a silly creature raised into respectability by her husband's talents. Nothing else.
Oh, come now, Margaret. She has a very sweet voice. Provided that one keeps out of the way of her quick temper.
Are you asleep?
No, I cannot sleep.
Did you know Millais has written to your mother?
Yes. I believe he has offered to draw Sophie for Mama.
And who will take her for her sittings?
Not I, John.
Oh, come now. I feel sure you'll want to see Everett again. Countess. He might bring you out of your gloom.
How can you suggest such a thing?
Easily. I told your mother how more than affable you were to him at Glenfinlas, and how usually less than affable you were with me. Laughter with him, tears with me.
That's not true, John.
How is he now?
I really have not the slightest notion.
Love makes such a fool of a man. No wonder Cupid is represented with an emaciated body sometimes. I shall tell him the sooner he gets over it, the better.
John, I should like a conversation with you, if you please. I do not wish to begin another year in this unnatural state.
What do you wish to say?
Why have you never made me your wife?
We have discussed this before, Effie. But I shall repeat my reasons. At first, I did not wish to have the burden of a pregnant wife traipsing over the continent with me.
That time has long since passed.
Furthermore, I wish to preserve your virginal beauty.
Oh, that cannot be right, John. The Bible says those who enter into holy matrimony should be as one.
Let me remind you that many of the best characters in church history have preserved virginity in marriage. So it cannot be bad to do for a time what others have done through life.
You said we would consummate our union when I was 25, last year.
It will be sinful to enter into such a connection with you.
Sinful? Why?
The responsibility of having children will be too great. You are not a fit person. You have an obvious derangement of the mind.
I could leave you, John Ruskin, and the law would be on my side.
And what if I do take all the blame? It would make a great piece of work for your father. You'd go home and lose your position. Consider that, if you please.
And you consider if you please. You need not take me to the German spa in the spring.
Why is that?
I have simply changed my mind.
How dare you change your mind without first consulting me? Your insolence is unpardonable.
Is it indeed?
The only thing for you is a good beating with a common stick.
Will you please take away your arm? Leave me alone.
I have never admired Romanism so much. If I had a confessor for you, he'd soon bring you to your senses.
Oh, I don't think you know anything about human creatures, John. You never think of people's feelings.
Shall I tell you a real reason why I have not made you my wife? It is because I imagined women to be quite different from what I saw you were. I was disgusted with your person on the first evening.
If ever I had to suffer the pains of eternal torment, they could not be worse than living with you.
My dear Mrs. Gray, I am very much obliged for your letter, as I shall now be more careful than ever. Nothing more shall be sent by me. I should never have sent drawings at all had it not been for Ruskin himself permitting me to do so.
He should send you nothing more. It is far too difficult and dangerous even for you.
No, he will not. He has already written to my mother.
John's behavior over the St. Agnes drawing is nothing short of monstrous.
I can see his plan all too clearly. He wishes to get me into a scrape with Everett.
You are not in touch with Everett?
Indirectly only, through my mother. But John does not believe there is no communication between us.
It seems to me that he is trying to push you into some sort of contact over the drawing.
I would rather do anything than have Everett's name dragged before the public.
Is he not going abroad with Holm and Hunt?
So he tells my mother.
Then wait. Well, if the Ruskins do not behave better, perhaps you could do something without disadvantage to either.
Oh, my sentiments exactly, Elizabeth. Everett's character stands so deservedly high in the country. It would be a lasting sorrow to have his reputation tarnished in the slightest degree.
Have you finished the portrait of John?
No, not yet. I cannot bear to think what he must endure in finishing it.
Oh, my poor dear child. You look so weary.
It is little wonder with that batch of Ruskins surrounding us.
Are the old people misbehaving?
Their malice is next to insane. The other day, old Mr. Ruskin said he wished to expatiate on my perfections of appearance and manner. He had never seen anything quite so perfect as I lay on the sofa. And no wonder Millet wished to paint me and admired me, etc., etc.
Oh, how sick.
Elizabeth,
mm-hmm.
I do not think I am John Ruskin's wife. He has never made me his wife.
What?
I'm still a virgin.
Effie. No, I cannot believe it. It's impossible. Now, I know he's a madman.
He has given me his reasons, of course.
Reasons? Fiddlesticks. Effie, you must do something about this immediately. Do your parents know?
No.
Then you must write to them without delay. After all, your father is a lawyer. He will know what to do.
Elizabeth, well, I hate being alone with John. I'm afraid of him at times. I think his grandfather's suicide still has an effect on him.
All the more reason to put an end to it. Under these particular circumstances, perhaps something other than divorce may be possible. Meanwhile, with your approval, I shall contrive to meet Everett Millet.
My dearest father, I was unwilling to tell you all, feeling your anger against John Ruskin, who has so ill-treated and abused me, and his parents who have seconded him.
You have endured much, my child, not least today.
Dr. Lee's examination was none too pleasant, but it has confirmed all I have told you.
There will be yet another humiliation to go through.
Aye, I know. Dr. Locock will have to give his opinion.
Aye, later, at the proper time, when the court demands.
I'm just glad this much is over.
Why, Effie? Why in God's name did you not tell us sooner? Have you told anyone else of your situation?
Everett and Lady Eastlake.
Has John ever made any attempt to consummate your marriage?
No.
For all those absurd, distasteful reasons he has given, presumably.
Yes. Oh, Papa, if he knew we were having this conversation here in London, he might well try to marry me, and I could do nothing.
Well, in my opinion, it is unlikely that he would make such an attempt.
But you will be prepared for all sorts of eloquence on his part when the truth is disclosed, won't you?
Of course.
Anything to screen his own conduct. He fears nothing. He thinks the public are fools.
Well, no bigger fool than John Ruskin will be made to look if he dares to defend himself. Now, come along now. Cheer up. Let's go over our little plan for your departure on Tuesday next. Now, you will ask John to accompany you to the station as you are leaving London to spend a holiday with us in Perth. The first stop is Hitchin, where Mama and I will be waiting.
Then I shall give you a parcel of my house keys, accounts and wedding ring.
Aye.
And Mama will come into the carriage beside me.
And I shall go back to the lawyers in London so that they may deliver your parcel to the Ruskins. And most important of all, to serve a citation of nullity on the unsuspecting John Ruskin.
My dear Mr. Millet.
Lady Eastlake, what a delightful surprise.
And what do you think of this year's exhibition?
Frankly, not very much. Except for Holman Hunt's masterpiece.
Why you not to have joined him abroad?
At one time, yes, but as we both know, the situation is different now.
Ah, it is indeed. Let us walk towards that corner. We may talk with a little more privacy.
Less conspicuous than standing before light of the world.
Indeed, Mr. Miller. You are keeping well.
A lighter heart, Lady Eastlake.
Here we are, quieter at least. Tell me, is the Ruskin portrait finished?
At long last.
What did he think about it?
Delighted, it would seem.
So you have not seen him since the last sitting, I take it?
No, and I have written to him to terminate our friendship, but he has replied in a thoroughly angry manner. He cannot understand how our relationship can possibly be affected by what has happened.
He has no feeling, that man. I think the most generous way of looking on his behavior is to believe him partially out of his mind.
There's been a strange silence from the Ruskin camp since Effie went north. No doubt they're seeking legal advice.
But what defense can he possibly have?
John Ruskin cannot complain of her conduct.
Oh, believe me, I also know what that poor girl had gone through.
In retrospect, I feel he purposely connived at the result. In the Highlands, he expressed approval and delight that Effie and I agree so well together.
I put nothing past that man.
At times I wish I'd never gone to the Highlands. I'm so miserable.
Oh, think only of the future, of the happiness to come.
My happiness would increase tenfold if I could be sure Effie's feelings for me were as strong as mine for her.
My dear Mr. Millet, I'm convinced they are. But Effie has had a bad and bitter experience. She needs time and breathing space. A hurried commitment will be rash and dangerous for both of you. So, patience, young man.
Thank you. I know now why Effie holds you in such deep affection.
Look.
What is it?
Over there, the Ruskins, father and son. Would you believe it? And there's David Roberts talking to them.
I think I'll slide away. They haven't seen me. Goodbye, Lady Eastlake.
Goodbye.
I shall be in touch with you next week.
Oh, please do. I'll wander about a little until Roberts has finished and then settle him in a corner.
So, you were pleased with the portrait?
Yes, very, with one or two reservations. Gave you a bit of a squint, didn't he, John?
Yeah, I know, but exuberant highlight, Papa, nothing more.
Your mother and I think you look a little yellow and bored.
Bored, certainly. I'm standing on one leg in Gower Street looking at a row of chimneys for 3 hours.
Yeah,
right. I shall look forward to seeing it exhibited. John, I have to ask. Rumors have reached my ears regarding your delightful wife. Are they true? I mean, has she left town? You?
Town is always buzzing with rumors, David, but yes, Mrs. Ruskin has gone to Scotland. For some time, I believe, and she will...
Well, she hopes... Mr. Roberts, my daughter-in-law is unlikely to return to my son, and frankly, we are delighted. He was entrapped into a marriage.
Father, please.
No, people should know the truth, John. Mr. Roberts will, I am sure, have the grace to put about the truth in place of gossip and conjecture. John has always been a prey to a pretty face, my dear sir. And to think that he could have married a French countess.
Let us overlook that, Father.
Should we also overlook the fact that Effie's father was virtually a pauper when you became betrothed?
So. Yes.
Well, for all that, she will be missed. She was held in great esteem by her many friends.
Possibly.
Her friends do not know her violent temper as my son knows it, nor do they know her extravagance as I know it.
What do you intend to do, John?
Nothing. She has gone to law, but I shall not defend. For the present, the world must have its full swing. And be assured, I shall neither be subdued nor materially changed by this matter.
Let us hope that Mrs. John Ruskin's parents will succeed in making her good, as she is undeniably beautiful.
Father, the private view is not the place for holding lengthy conversations, and I have more important things to think about.
Yes, quite so. Let me take our leave, Mr. Roberts, but I leave you with a delightful thought that sprang from his dear mamma's lips this very morning. She said, "Never mind, we shall at least have John to ourselves."
We find that the usual signs of virginity are perfect, and that she is naturally and perfectly formed, and there are no impediments on her part to a proper consummation of the marriage. Signed, Charles Locock, M.D.
Lady Lewis.
My dear, you look ravishing. Thank you. No need for introductions. I do believe you know just about all my other guests.
Yes, I can see a dozen familiar faces already.
Come along, you've time for a sherry before dinner.
My dear, you must tell me all about the Ruskins. I couldn't believe it.
Really? Most people were not surprised.
Of course, he was a dreadful husband. Always left her alone, totally cold and abstracted. Mm. But my goodness, the real reason. Astounding, poor child. My heart is full of tenderness. The Dean and I have always felt a lively interest in her, but now we really love and honor her.
Ruskin's a beast, Mrs. Miller.
You see, everyone's talking about it. Thackeray considers him a madman. There isn't a drawing room in town that is not buzzing about the Ruskins. Your sherry, my dear.
Thank you.
But I, for one, would be ready to fight her battles like a true knight if it were necessary.
Well said, Mr. Lockhart. You must write and tell her how much good opinion and affection is on her side.
All except Lady Trevelyan, so I'm told. She's a staunch Ruskinite.
I should be pleased if Lady Trevelyan came my way. I should delight in explaining to her a few things about marriage. My mamma always called Sir Walter a cobra, which may, of course, have confused Lady Dean's notion of conjugal duty.
It's all very well for Lady Trevelyan, but what to do with a man? And surely when women are banished from society for their faults, they'll never admit such a villain as that.
He has enough of the Jesuit to write some grandiloquent sophistry to gull the public.
And he will emerge the injured one.
Yes, of course.
Apart from Lady Trevelyan, I believe there are a few young ladies who will not hear a word against him.
Really? Then it is a pity they had not been married to him.
The said John Ruskin was incapable of consummating the same by reason of incurable impotency, wherefore, and by reason of the premises, we do pronounce and decree that such a marriage, or rather show or effigy of marriage, so had and solemnized, or rather profaned, between the said John Ruskin.
My dear John, what can I say, except that I'm profoundly shocked? I had heard rumors, of course. We have known each other for many years, Henry, and you are the one person to whom I'm able to talk about my unfortunate marriage. Do you wish us to have a perfectly frank discussion? After what has been declared and disclosed in public, there can be no other. John, as a deeply religious man, I'd never condone the destruction of marriage. There's nothing in the scriptures that suggests there could be grounds for such an unholy action. On the other hand, I don't quite agree with Carlyle that a woman should bear suffering in silence and never leave her husband.
I see. So what are your conclusions, Henry?
Well, if we are talking of a non-marriage, in the strict understanding of that word, then that's something new to me. For the moment, John, beyond my comprehension.
That is why I am here, to explain and to clarify. I was not a good husband in the conventional manner, I suppose. I'm certainly terribly selfish. Effie was usually ill or ailing, and I have little patience with invalids.
Many men cannot tolerate illness in their spouses. As we are, being perfectly frank, shall we say that your attentiveness as a husband was conspicuous by its absence?
And yet, there are few husbands who could look back on their married life with more certainty of having done all they could for their wives than I.
John, why did you marry?
To have a companion during a period when I was overworked and despondent.
And passion?
I felt little passion.
I see. Did Effie not live up to your expectations as a companion?
If companionship implies comfort and help, there was none forthcoming. On the contrary, it was I who was expected to supply both to her.
But you can't deny Effie loved you.
She was young and affectionate, and had at first considerable regard for me, but never a devoted nor an unselfish one.
In which way?
But simply I refused to spend my days leading cards and my nights leaning against drawing-room walls. And I would not allow my life's work to be interfered with.
Oh, surely that would be the last thing Effie would want.
I thought when I married that I could make of Effie all that I wanted a wife to be. But alas, she married me thinking the same thing.
It's foolish to suppose we have the power to change each other. We are what we are.
But I knew little of the world. I was inexperienced in judging the expression of faces, except on canvas. Thus, I did not know Effie.
But you had some happy times, nevertheless. Your marriage wasn't all black. I know that.
Indeed, and when she was with people she liked, she made herself agreeable.
You appear to relate very well.
I was desirous that it should appear so, but I was deceived in her character. She had a self-will as dominant as my own, and, if I may say it without immodesty, less rational.
So, you showed your anger from time to time, presumably.
Frequently. But to my sorrow and astonishment, I found she could endure my anger without distress.
And now? What happens now to Effie?
You may well ask, my dear Henry. Her passions seem to have conquered her reason. She's had a fixed mania to get quit of me and to revenge herself upon me for all the suffering that her own self-will has caused.
I think most of us who know you both realize why these passions have come to a head.
Everyone knows. And her passion for this person is so strong that if she can obtain a divorce from me, she may very well marry.
When I visit you at Glenfinnes, even I observed and was struck by the singularly intimate ease of manner between Effie and, well, let's not evade truth, Mr. Milley.
Really? I observed nothing.
But John, when you stayed with the Trevelyans, Sir Walter himself took you aside and mentioned his own similar observation.
I could not see the harm. They were merely playful children. I have no capacity for watching flirtations. But though Millet's honour and principle have not failed him, his sense has.
But what do you think Millet will do when he hears of the declaration?
He may feel that marriage is the only course open to him. A principle of honour. After all, he was temptation to the woman. As for her, let her escape with some honour if she can. But if there is any retribution in this life, there are dark hours in the distance for her.
Well, believe me, you have all my sympathy and compassion. This dreadful loss.
I'll take your sympathy, Amiotha. My real sorrows are of another kind. Turner's death and the destruction of 13th century buildings are sadder by 100-fold than any domestic calamity.
Really? Yes. Yes, I can see that. John, as a doctor, I should like to ask you about one aspect of your marriage which was fundamental to its well-being. I find it baffling. I trust we will continue to be frank with each other.
Of course.
Non-consummation. Is it the truth your marriage was never?
Never.
But why? I can't understand why. Effie is a beautiful, desirable woman.
It may be thought strange, I agree, that I could abstain. But though her face was beautiful, her person was not formed to excite passion.
She's a woman as all other women.
There were circumstances about her person that disgusted me, that checked passion on the first night.
Was she perhaps the first unclothed female you've seen? Though in normal circumstances, that alone excites passion in another one.
Well, she was glad. Neither of us wanted a family to interrupt our European tours. We made a pact that I should make her my wife when she was 25.
But why didn't you?
She became shameless, horrible, false. And furthermore, I'm convinced she suffers from a nervous affection of the brain.
Perhaps caused by non-consummation?
Certainly not. I offered to consummate the marriage at any time if she considered it better for her health.
Oh, John, surely consummation cannot be commanded in a marriage. It's a natural culmination of loving and caring.
Exactly. And Effie's love for me had diminished so much that she dreaded the idea of being my wife rather than wanting it.
Well, to go back to your first night, I speak now as a doctor. Was Effie menstruating? It's perfectly natural and normal.
Have you observed how the sunlight changes texture as well as color?
Women are not marble statuary, John. They have pubic hair as we have. Perhaps you didn't realize.
There are at least 6 colors in 1 square foot on that chestnut tree bar. Beautiful.
Are you putting in a defense?
No.
Do you wish the world to regard you as impotent?
I am not impotent, Henry. I can prove my virility.
How?
Did I never tell you I had Rousseau's complaint?
I'm sorry?
Rousseau, in his confessions. He had a habit he could never break himself of. I likewise.
Self-abuse. Yes, I see. So you can prove your virility only to yourself. I wish I could help you, John.
Henry, do not think I was not fond of her. I am not demonstrative in my affections. But I loved her dearly.
My dear old friend. I know that. I know.
But with people whom I like, I seem so cold because I dare not give rein. Between all and nothing, there is not a spider's thread in my mind. Therefore, it is forever. Nothing.
Do you realize that tomorrow I'll be married?
Me too.
You've been married before.
From today, Everett. We're not going to talk about it. Not about...
The party.
The party. Ever again.
Oh, I do so want to make you happy. To make up for the past.
And I would go through all that misery again, rather than miss being with you for one day.
Darling Effie. Tomorrow, my wife. Imagine. Mrs. Millay.
Well, my lovely daughter, I'm delivering you into good hands this time.
I know you are, Papa.
You look beautiful, Effie.
Is my wife ready?
Oh.
We must be off.
I'm ready.
Come on, then. Come on, Effie. Into the coach with you. That's it. That's it. Away we go, then.
Take care of my Everett.
Bye-bye, my
bye. Bye-bye, bye-bye, darling. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Any tears, Sophia?
Maybe. A little one.
There's no need to fret, my dear. Not anymore.
I believe you, George.
Aye. And there'll be bairns this time. You mark my words.
I am not demonstrative in my affections. But I loved her dearly. Yet, between all and nothing, there is not a spider's thread in my mind. Therefore, it is forever. Nothing.
In Dear Countess by Elizabeth Morgan, the cast was John Ruskin, Derek Jacobi, Effie Ruskin, Bridget McCann, Mr. Ruskin, Timothy West, and Mrs. Ruskin, Elizabeth Morgan. Mr. Gray, Henry Stamper. Mrs. Gray, Eva Stewart. John Everett Millay, Michael Fenner. Dr. Henry Ackland, John Rye. Lady Elizabeth Eastlake, Maddie Head. Lady Lewis, Jean Trend. And Mr. Roberts and Lockhart, Nigel Graham. The play was directed by Jerry Jones.